We're going to continue with Canto 3, Chapter 12, Creation of the Kumaras and Others, and yesterday we ended with Brahma's beginning to manifest the four Vedas from his four mouths as he was contemplating his service. Krishna gave him transcendental knowledge. Aha! From engaging in devotional service to Krishna, causelessly knowledge and detachment arise. Aha! Now, Brahma's capacity for devotional service is super excellent. Even he made this little mental error. His capacity for devotional service is super excellent. And so the Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma, that mental mistake, was quickly corrected by Krishna himself in reciprocation with Brahma's super excellent standard of devotional service to Krishna. Imagine standing before you the task of creating universe. Standing before us is some other task, much lighter. And we may feel intimidated by, oh, how am I going to do this? Sometimes we feel like that. But serve we must to our capacity, and if some indication is given some service, then some service. And then capacity comes from the mood of service, including knowledge and detachment. So the four Vedas became manifest as he was contemplating his service of creating the universe. So now we're going to continue text 35. This is what Brahma does next. The four kinds of paraphernalia for conducting the fire sacrifice became manifest. Here's the four. The performer, that's in brackets the chanter, the offerer, the fire, and the action performed in terms of the supplementary Vedas. Also, the four principles of religiosity, truth, austerity, mercy, and cleanliness, and the duties of the four social orders all became manifest. Brahma's powerful. Purport. Eating, sleeping, defending, and mating are the four principles of material bodily demands which are common to both animals and human society. To distinguish human society from the animals, there is the performance of religious activities in terms of the social statuses and orders of life. They are all clearly mentioned in the Vedic literatures and were manifested by Brahma when the four Vedas were generated from his four mouths. Thus, the duties of mankind in terms of the statuses and social orders were established to be observed by the civilized man. Those who traditionally follow these principles are called Aryans, or progressive human beings. So here's the Sanskrit, Chatu Hotram, the paraphernalia for sacrifice. Karma Tantram, action and the expansions of such activities. Then again, the four principles of religiosity, Tata Eva, in the same way, the social ashram, social orders, and vritaya. So they're like varna and ashram became manifest from Brahma's mouths. So it appears that, at least from the close, you know, superficial scrutiny, the four kinds of paraphernalia are not listed, but Prabhupada very kindly lists them. The performer, the offerer, the fire, and the actions performed in terms of the supplementary Vedas. The supplementary Vedas, that is there in the Sanskrit. Upaveda. So the Vedas and the Upavedas. Supplementary. So there's texts within, if you see the chart of the Vedic, the elements of the Vedas, one of them is the Upavedas. And it describes procedures for Tantra, the procedures for performance of sacrifice. So the paraphernalia, the procedures, the whole, the chanter, the offerer, the fire, and the action performed in terms of the supplementary Vedas. So he manifested all these things. Text 36. Vidura said, "Oh, great sage, whose only wealth is penance, kindly explain to me how and with whose help Brahma established the Vedic knowledge which emanated from his mouth." So now he has the Vedas, and what do you do with it after that? Maitreya said, "Beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Rik, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, became manifest. Thereafter, Vedic hymns, which had not been pronounced before, comma, priestly rituals, the subject matters of the recitation, and transcendental activities were all established one after another." Text 38. He also created the medical science, Ayurveda, military art, Dhanurveda, musical art, Gandharvam Vedam, and architectural science, Sthapatyam, all from the Vedas. They all emanated one after another, beginning from the front face. Purport. The Vedas contain perfect knowledge, which includes all kinds of knowledge necessary for the human society, not only on this particular planet, but on other planets as well. It is understood that military art is also necessary for the upkeep of social order, as is the art of music. All these groups of knowledge are called Upa Purana, or supplements of the Vedas. Spiritual knowledge is the main topic of the Vedas, but to help the human beings' spiritual pursuit of knowledge, the other information, as above mentioned, forms necessary branches of Vedic knowledge. Text 39. He then created the fifth Veda. Hey, fifth Veda. The Puranas and Itihasas. There's the Sanskrit. Itihasa, Puranani, Panchamam, Vedam, Ishwaraha. From all his mouth, since he could see all the past, present, and future. Sarva Darshana. Purport. There are histories of particular countries. And mind you, this is before there's countries. before there's people populating those countries and doing things in those countries. He saw it all and manifested them. It's important because the argument of certain scholars, a strong element of scholars, is the Puranas and Itihasas were recent creations, and they give dates and wild speculation about who composed them, or roughly around such and such time, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it has to be like that because how can you have histories that's part of the original Vedas? The original Vedas is before there's creation. That's the logic. Therefore, it can't be part of the original Veda because there wasn't anything. Vedas are eternal. Before there was anything, how you can have histories? Therefore, they're recent creations. Purport. There are histories of particular countries and nations of all the world, but the Puranas are the histories of the universe, not only in one millennium, but in many kalpas. Brahma has knowledge of those historical facts. And therefore, all the Puranas are histories. As originally composed by Brahma, they are part of the Vedas and are called the fifth Veda. I'll read some more. Text 40. All the different varieties of fire sacrifices. And they're listed here, but it's not in the Sanskrit. So, Shodashi Ut Ukta Purishi Agishtoma. Aptor Yama Ati Ratra Atir Ratra Va Japaya and Gosava in parentheses became manifested from the eastern mouth of Brahma. Education, text 41. Education, Vidya. Charity, danam, penance, tapa, and truth, satyam, are said to be the four legs of religion. We read about this in the first canto. And to learn this, there are four orders of life with different classifications of castes according to vocation, varnas. So again, this is Vittibi. Vittibi. Brahma created all these in systematic order. Purport. The nucleus of the four social orders. Dash. Brahmacharya, or student life. Grihastha, or household family life. Vanaprastha, or retired for practicing penance. And sannyas, or renounced life for preaching the truth. Dash. The nucleus is the four legs of religion. The vocational divisions are Brahmanas, or the intelligent class, Kshatriyas, the administrative class, Vaishyas, the mercantile productive class, and the Shudras, or general labor class, who have no specific qualifications. All were systematically planned and created by Brahma for the regular promotion of self-realization. Student life is meant for acquiring the best education, semicolon. Household family life is meant for gratifying the senses, provided it is performed with a charitable disposition of mind. Retirement from household life is meant for penance and advancement of spiritual life. And renounced life is meant for preaching the absolute truth to the people in general. The combined actions of all members of society make the whole situation favorable for the upliftment of the mission of human life. The beginning of this social institution is based on education, meant for purifying the animal propensities of the human being. The highest purificatory process is knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the purest of the pure. Bhagavat Purana is giving us here this Visarga, the secondary creation of the Personality of Godhead through the agency of Brahma, and in short, the Lord is not whimsical. He doesn't create a situation and then walk away, leaving chaos. He provides the means for the purpose of creation to be fulfilled, because that's his desire, that the purpose of creation be fulfilled. And the purpose of the creation is to restore the original consciousness of the living entity. And to do that, principles of, we'll say it in short, principles of Dharma or Varnashram Dharma are there. Prabhupada would like to speak about, from time to time, Hinduism is a foreign word, how it came, he describes. So the real understanding of the people on the other side of the Sindhu River is the followers of Varnashram Dharma and Sanatana Dharma, the eternal occupation of the living entity. Dharma carefully being translated as the occupation of living entity. The occupation of living entity doesn't mean, you know, what you do for a living, what's your career. It's service in principle, and eternal service is eternal service to the Supreme Lord. And that eternal service to the Supreme Lord is the purpose of creation. So different systems, according to psychophysical nature, varna and ashram, because there's diversity out there. Different people have different propensities in their tendencies to be enjoyers of matter, so there's different propensities and different bodies and mentalities. So how to regulate those to bring about the Sanatana Dharma? That's what all of this is. And it's the Lord's creation. He says, Chaturvarnamaya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasri. He takes credit for establishing. But then, right after that, he says, but yet I'm the non-doer. Behold my mystic opulence. So part of that mystic opulence is he entrusts and empowers Brahma to do it. So the question of Vidura was, how did he put this into action? You know, the four Vedas. So this is just the beginning of that, the response to that question. Divisions and divisions. So they're not living entities yet. There's just, you know, the plan and the knowledge. The Vedas, it's knowledge. And then living entities are going to be given the opportunity to have bodies, and then those living entities are going to have the opportunity to receive that knowledge and apply that knowledge, just like us. That's the practical application for us. This Vedic knowledge is to restore our relationship with the Personality of Godhead, Sanatana Dharma. Our constitutional position is to serve the Supreme Person. That's who we are. Then there's varieties. There's the spiritual identity, and then there's the psychophysical identity, which we aren't, but we operate according to that to assist. The Sanatana Dharma. I'm going to spend a little time on this sentence and then see if there's some discussion. In the purport of text 38, after having discussed the Upa Puranas, or supplements of the Vedas, you know, the music knowledge and medical knowledge and military knowledge and all these other Upaveda or Upapurana divisions of the Vedas, Prabhupada writes, spiritual knowledge is the main topic of the Vedas, but to help the human beings, spiritual pursuit of knowledge, meaning knowledge meaning transcendental knowledge of the Absolute Truth, that kind of knowledge. I was just listening to a lecture, I think yesterday, where Prabhupada was speaking about, there's a Sanskrit term for knowledge, that is, he called it an art. He gave the example of somebody that's a mechanic or an electrician. So if the mechanic, if your car isn't working, you contact a mechanic. And the mechanic has the knowledge, whatever the Sanskrit term, I can't recall, but he has the knowledge of what's wrong with the machine, and he touches something or changes a part, and then, zoom, it works. That, or the electrician. Your electrical appliance is not working, and he knows how to make it work, and then it works. The air conditioning, or the heater, or the this or that, or whatever it is, the fan, or something. Your computer, and somebody knows how to fix it. That's a certain kind of knowledge. It's a category within the Vedas. But that's not the meaning of this term, vidya. He manifested knowledge. It means transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge means knowledge of the eternal self. Knowledge of the eternal self is incomplete without knowledge of the supreme source of everything, because we don't exist independently. We exist in a relationship with the source of everything. So that's knowledge. So spiritual knowledge is the main subject of the Vedas, but to help the human being's spiritual pursuit of knowledge, the other information as above mentioned, forms necessary branches of Vedic knowledge. So I wanted to comment on taking knowledge from other sources besides the Vedas. And I was specifically thinking about it the last couple of days. I finally finished listening to the four parts, well, viewing, you know, video recording of Bir Krishnamurti's presentation in Chicago on compassionate communication, compassionate awakening, or compassionate, that was the title in Gita Nagari, awaken our compassionate nature. Intrinsic to the soul is compassion. There, you know, all qualities of the soul are intrinsic. If it's something that you glue on to the soul, then it's not, that's something else, that's this other kind of knowledge. But awakening that aspect, we know that all the good qualities of the demigods and anyone become awakened by bhakti. So all we need is bhakti, and some people hold that view. All we need is bhakti, because bhakti connects us with the Absolute Truth. That's all you need. So here's the statement saying that's the main message, and other parts of the Vedas are there to assist that. You know, medical, and he specifically refers to music and military. You know, Maitreya probably didn't have music. Certainly didn't have military. But for society in general, if you're not Maitreya, or somebody of that caliber, and you know, stage of evolution of life, then these other aspects of knowledge are beneficial. So if there's some knowledge out there in the universe, whether it's in the course of his explanation, Bir Krishnamurti repeated over and over, this is not a class about how to manage. This is a class about connecting in relationships. Now, if there's, not if, whatever truths exist, it's not new. It's within the Vedas. So we don't reject knowledge that's out there, if it's true. But, you know, how do we know if it's true? Because the source is not a Marshall Rosenberg or somebody else out there, Maslow, or they're not self-realized souls, they're not God-conscious. But that doesn't mean they can't have access to some truths. So I am contemplating encouraging a certain devotee who really has benefited from this subject matter to embark on a little PhD project kind of thing of researching where our acharyas have expressed these truths. And our acharyas will express the truths based on the principle that there's scriptural reference. Whether they give the scriptural reference, there's scriptural reference. There must be, if it's true. So, to help nourish the shelter in, you know, the roots going to the Vedas, and we're growing roots in our lives. Let those roots go to the Vedas, because the Vedas are, by design, they're connecting us to Krishna. They're connecting us to the Absolute Truth. When we're going down the path of life, as we all are going down the path of life, where we hear from is very important. And the quality of how we hear is also important. And so knowledge like this kind of knowledge needs to come through a qualified source. And the qualified source best, if there's truths, to see where does it connect with. This is one of the statements in Bhagavad Gita 7.15 about austerity of speech. In the purport, Prabhupada says, in spiritual matters, when one speaks, immediately one makes reference to scriptural authority. It's part of austerity of speech. Besides, you know, speaking truths, in the sense, specifically in terms of absolute knowledge. So if there's something, if there's an Upaveda-like understanding, it should be that the intention and the desire of the devotee to connect that truth with the Vedas. It's just part of austerity of speech. And it's born of faith that knowledge is perfect. Conversely, any other knowledge is less than perfect, because it's through the filter of senses and mind. Senses are imperfect and the mind makes mistakes. So to have perfect knowledge, it has to connect with the Vedas. So I'm sure, to a degree, that there's truths in anything, there's a connection with the Vedas, and there's statements within the Vedas, either explicitly or implicitly, which connect one to that truth, that have as a purpose to restore our transcendental knowledge of who we are and the Supreme Personality of Godhead to help us manage our affairs in this world. Now specifically with this topic, it's to, on the positive side, to strengthen the connection in our relationships, on the negative side, to minimize the tendency to have dissension, particularly, you know, the feature of Kali Yuga is dissension and quarrel amongst people who they come together and they don't understand one another, and there's dissension. I'm sure that there's sources that speak to these points. A very likely source is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because he wrote extensively, and the nature of how he wrote, the audience for whom he wrote, he covers all kinds of topics. And having to do with householders and so many things. Very, very practical application points with abundant scriptural references. So there's one source, I'm sure. There's something, and how he expresses it is important for us. Now, it's not that Prabhupada was negligent. He had a different audience, and he had a particular mission given to him by his spiritual master, and further expanded by his own volition. But his audience was the world. And he gave us, there's some phrase that he used, I've given you the skeleton, now you fill it in. Then we have to be cautious as we start filling it in, that we don't fill it in with, if it's gold, you don't fill it in with lead. That metaphor is an argument that Jiva Goswami uses in his Tattva Sandarbha, that the Smritis are as Vedic as the Shrutis because they're supplemental. And he gives the argument, the logical argument is, if you're going to augment a gold ornament, you don't use anything other than gold. So if the Shrutis are being augmented by the Smritis, the Puranas and Itihasas, then they got to be gold. They have to be of the same nature. So we have to be careful as we fill in the skeleton. Understand how to navigate our way through the path of life and live a life in bhakti, where, you know, the world that we're in is not so abundant in bhakti. And then on the other hand, take gold from a filthy place. Now that requires a swan-like person who can take milk from water and not take the water, just the milk. Takes a paramahansa, takes a very elevated person to do something like that. We're not so elevated. So we have to be very careful. And being eclectic is popular. That's out there. Overabundance of eclecticism. So, without giving examples of that, we, practicing devotees, wishing to ourselves become Krishna conscious and to set an example for others. This is what Krishna consciousness looks like, and to help others that aren't not yet Krishna conscious to understand Krishna consciousness. Well, you know, it's a current discussion going on in our society. How do we make it Krishna consciousness relevant and relatable to people that have this eclecticism notion, and you just give them a something that doesn't touch upon their practical lives. We just say surrender to Krishna Prabhu, and you know, it's not so relatable. And not just speaking about imposing rules, I'm speaking about making it relatable to help address needs and problems and concerns without going astray from the central message. Take shelter of Krishna. Food for thought. Any discussion? Yes? Yesterday, okay.
I was just going back and reading the verses and the class, and was connecting it with the portion about the rescuer thing or that scenario.
Yes.
And that was giving a very clear outline of that kind of a situation where the sons of Brahma, when they were seeing that dynamic, how they acted very responsibly and very respectfully.
Yes.
And their inner contemplations and also this aspect that there was one statement that Prabhupada made that it is dangerous for a person who are on the path of self-realization. He was making in this content that how we address in the position of observer or like the son of Brahma, that their consciousness or their contemplation weren't like bringing Lord Brahma down or disrespecting him or neglecting him, but rather they were very effective because they were very clear in their consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was reflecting back on that kind of a scenario, so one of the things that, another way of saying the rescuer tendency is this...
Rescuing tendency.
Yeah, is this tendency of owning someone else's problem. That, it's this thing that I was reflecting on Braj Bihari Prabhu's seminar where he once was mentioning that the first question to ask in problem solving is, who owns the problem? And the idea of asking that question is not that we become... like aloof or but it's like then we become effective in how do we respond once that clarity is there that whose problem it is. And there's a different way of approaching. If it's my problem, I give I message, but if it's someone else's problem, then I change the gear and I empower the other person by basically using open-ended question or not owning the someone else's problem.
That was what his comment was, open-ended questions?
That was one aspect.
One aspect.
So this idea that when I get into this mode, that I actually tend to own the other person's problem, I get disconnected from the person and my attention went on the problem. And in that, my energy is flowing more on the problem and the disconnect is that I've not seen the wholesome aspect of that devotee.
You're not seeing the which?
The wholesome aspect of that devotee.
The wholesome aspect.
So what I'm...
The wholesome aspect meaning?
Meaning that I'm focused on the unwholesome choice that the person is heading toward.
Oh, so let me just get that. It's an important step. There's an unwholesome choice, and if I just focus on the unwholesome choice, I neglect the wholesomeness of the person.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the wholesomeness is their capacity to make right choices.
Or their connection with the Lord, that the regard for devotee is bigger than the behavior of the devotee. That there's a conditioned side of the devotee that's propelling, or the material energy is propelling them to make certain choices. But then I have to see that in the light. Not what I'm trying to say is that when my attention is not in the right side or my consciousness is not fixed on the light, I become the part of the problem. And in that, I'm not bringing light in the relationship. And
it has to do with what I'm gathering from what you're saying. It has to do with one's own connection with Krishna. And if that connection with Krishna is not sufficiently strong, then I can't properly connect with the person either.
Yes.
because my focus goes to not to their, you're using the word wholesomeness, that is their Krishna connection. My attention is going to the behavior, whether it's good or bad, and appreciating the good and trying to be the rescuer for the bad. But in either case, there's not a connection with the person, because the connection with the personality Godhead is missing. So our own wholesomeness is needed, using that phrase. Our own connection with Krishna is needed. That to whatever degree we have conscious connection with Krishna, to that degree we can have a genuine relationship with another person. And if they're going through some difficulty, we don't own the difficulty. We can be of service to Krishna for that other soul. So I appreciate this, you're having gone back over and picking up these elements. Now, other than, as you were speaking, there's other elements besides not owning the problem in terms of the rescuer mentality or rescuer consciousness. There's, you could say, etiquette or cultural, because this is their father. And, you know, he's respected by everybody in the creation. So, aside from owning the problem, they had culture. And that helped them to express themselves in the proper manner, besides, you know, the rescuer thing. And that cultural dynamic, I mean, it's one of the things that in the West, or, you know, where education isn't properly grounded, respect isn't there, you know, culture is missing. You know, if you see something, say something. That's the culture. You just got to speak the truth, man. Blah, blah, blah. You know, without any, you know, that then, you know, it becomes, instead of the mood of service, so it's the mood of service to Krishna is the transcendental position. I maybe try to be of service to someone else instead of, you know, the rescuer, but in service to someone else, but it's still incomplete. And that is to say, you know, not just owning the problem as I'm trying to serve someone else and be detached, because it's up to them to let them make their choices. It's going to be less effective if I'm simply thinking I'm the servant of this other person that's, you know, could use some help. Whether it's somebody that's a superior or a subordinate or a peer. Say it conversely. Culture is a natural decoration for persons who are Krishna conscious. All the good qualities of the demigods become manifest within one who's engaged in bhakti. And without those good qualities, then my effectiveness is going to be diminished. So aside from, you know, who owns the problem, there's other, all I'm saying here is there's other aspects or factors at play. And it's not just one switch, take care of, I don't own the problem, and now everything's going to be nice. Say it differently. Attachment to Krishna means I can then be detached from owning the problem. And the attachment to Krishna results in some other things. That's the goal. Pleasing Krishna is the goal. Pleasing Krishna is the goal. not just who owns the problem. And I'm emphasizing this because that's my the thought that I'm going to share with a particular devotee to do this research, because that's the purpose of the Vedas, to come to that position of pleasing Krishna. And then any secondary, what I might do in this circumstance, that circumstance, you know, besides being not being the rescuer, not being the one that owns the problem, to stay in that space, I'm a conditioned soul, how do I get out of being a conditioned soul? It says, Krishna is to be pleased, the bhakti principle. And then I can do it, at least gradually learn, evolve culture. In a circumstance that's devoid of culture. Devoid of culture. And then people with a big hole inside, you know, trying to fill the hole with something crazy. Crazy. Okay. Yeah.
So, I was getting what you were clarifying this point about who owns the problem. And when I was saying it for myself, or how I was hearing that was, for me, that question brings me the clarity that, you know, the idea of that question for me was that, look where my attention is going. And if my attention is going on the problem more than on the devotee or the connection, that basically what I felt was that when the absorption went on the problem solving, without recognizing that, by not recognizing this idea of who owns the problem, my effectiveness is I'm disempowering that person by not trusting that that they have a connection with the Lord. So I have to trust that deep regard has to go to the devotee, that a devotee is very special to the Lord, and ultimately the light comes from the Lord or the connection comes from the Lord. And I have to become an instrument, a very responsible instrument. And my first responsibility is to check my own consciousness and the mood, not just my action of the bomb. So in that sense, that it's not that when I say that it's not my who owns the problem, that I'm also saying that
I got it. It's not, hey, I'm out of here. It's being present in the proper consciousness. So then I can see the soul, and you said the wholesomeness of the soul. That means the connection with Krishna of the soul. Otherwise, as you put it also, I'm part of the problem. I got the message. You know, it's the other is too easy. The doership mentality is, boom. We're habituated to that one, like anything. And to not go down that path and to do this respect, because it's part of respect. I respect the other person has wholesomeness. Even they got a problem. Good? Yes.
Well, actually, like yesterday's Bhagavatam class and today, like, what I learned from that, particularly the situation of Lord Rama, he seemingly, got...
Made a gross mistake.
Yes. And then what I was appreciating was, you know, he got out of it, and I mean, he was continuing his service, whatever, you know, creation, whatever he was doing. That is something that, you know...
It's powerful.
It is very powerful for me in particular because...
Sure.
I get into something and there is a shame and, you know, coming out of that is really difficult for me. I was appreciating that.
Well, that may take some time.
Yes.
And the anecdote, that the medicine, is bhakti. Bhakti has the power to dissolve all that. So it's not as simple as, you know, walking away, like coming from this discussion yesterday. There's a conflict situation, and should I say something so I can just... So then it starts internal. Charity begins at home. So how do I address my own shortcomings and, you know, when a tendency that manifests and then starts to grow and I'm struggling with it. Then, you know, so... Yes, yeah, it's a very, very instructive. The light goes on saying it's unwholesome. And somebody may say, or your own conscience may say, or combination. And so now how do you get out of it? Besides, like, bury yourself in self-pity or shame, as you say.
It's similar to also, you know, Brahma stealing the...
Yeah,
cancer.
Yeah.
And the verse that they will come from, right? It's very powerful.
Yeah, it is. It's very powerful. Bhakti is very powerful. That's where he went. He went to his particular lifetime's, you know, service to Krishna. And he began contemplating how to carry out that, you know, the intention became realigned. Anything else? Yeah?
Just a question. Like, we see knowledge, we talk about knowledge coming from Vedas, right? Education, military science, But then we see modern science and math and so many other things, which are seemingly man-made or made by somebody who's embodied, a living entity who's embodied, may have invented something.
Okay.
How do we make that connection?
How do we make the which connection?
Connection between saying that everything comes from the Vedas, but something that we know is being created by somebody.
Oh, well, you know, they can't create something new. They discovered something that already exists. They may not be knowledgeable in the Vedas, but if it already exists and they discover it, that's where it comes from. They're just not acknowledging where it comes from. Well, some may not. The truths exist. If they're truths, they exist. Someone may stumble on a truth that already exists, and then they take credit for it.
What I'm understanding is the phone may be, you know, discovered or invented or something, but the idea of that is in the Vedas.
Well, there's manipulation of laws of nature and the intelligence to manipulate those laws. It's not that there's phones in Vaikuntha or something, but the principles governing material nature are being manipulated by people that have a motivation of sense gratification or facilitating their desires. And so Krishna gives that intelligence as well as the laws of nature, and they put it together. So how the laws of nature work, that's within the Vedas. It's created by Brahma, and knowledge of it is within the Vedas. So someone can come along and stumble on, here's that's what technology is. The cause and effect, the push and the pull of material nature. Here's a law. You wiggle this and that wiggles. And so now let's make, you know, some device that you wiggle this and it wiggles that. It's just laws of nature, you know, aimed at fulfilling desires. And then they patent it and, you know, make a living. Yeah.
So you were saying during the class to, like, one way is to address the concern of others and then also not deviating from the essence of the message, which is to the Krishna consciousness. But I can give you an example, like in case of a childless couple. So the message, I mean, it's hard for them to see what Krishna has given them in their life. And no matter what we discuss, the thing goes back to, some of God has deprived us of a child. Or somebody who has lost someone. So how do we talk to people like those and convince or give the message of Krishna consciousness?
Could you say with the first part again, you know, that in the class I said something, because you're connecting the two things and I didn't get the first part, how it connect with the second part.
You were saying when we are reaching out to people, we try to address their needs, their concerns, but not deviating from the message.
Okay.
Yeah.
It depends on the piety, or the piety meaning that there's a tendency to turn to God when there's a, you know, chaturvarna maya shrutstam. Excuse me. There are four types of pious people that surrender to Krishna. If they're pious, meaning they tend to surrender to Krishna, to the degree that they're pious in that sense. Let's look at the abundance of what you have. Now, here's an area where it's a very reasonable desire and it's not being fulfilled. Let's look at the abundance of what you do have, and if that's not taking place, then, it's like I was visiting someplace and they're saying, you used to da-da-da-da-da, and now you don't come da-da-da-da-da. I said, rather than, you know, looking at what I don't do, why don't you look at what I do? For you. Not just, you know, and for everybody, but for, you know, to my capacity. So, look to God, and what is it that He's giving? Abundantly. And if this isn't being fulfilled, who can say what the intention is? You know, the cause of this effect doesn't mean mercilessness. Maybe you're feeling that, but doesn't mean it's coming from mercilessness. Who can say what the cause of that is? So, accept the will of the Supreme Lord. Here's the areas that you can look at in your life. The same as this Lord, Bhishma Dev to Yudhisthira. Have you been living your life according to theistic conduct? Have you been doing so under the guidance of qualified Brahmanas and Vaishnavas? And have you been dedicating those activities to the Supreme Lord? Check those things, O pious soul. check those things. And if there's discrepancy in those things, work on those things. Not just like, so that you can get your desire fulfilled. Because if the intention of the Lord is that you don't have a child, then that's the intention of the Lord. For reasons you don't understand, that's okay. Because he's kind. He's not hard. Sometimes in a family where a child is denied something, they may feel bad towards the person who's denying something. But the person who's denying something is not mean. Ha ha, you don't get to have da 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 da. I'm big and you're small, so you can't have. That's it. So when there is a loving relationship, denial of something isn't mean. If there's another, and you, the one who's small may not understand what that bigger something is. But as life unfolds, then that may become understood. There's some other service that Krishna wants me to do besides that service. It's a service. And if the facility for the service doesn't come, there's some other service. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.